Good afternoon, Tony Gosling from Bilderberg.org. How are you?
I'm fine, Dave. Just having seen what's been going on at this Bilderberg meeting over in the United States.
Yes.
Just to make it clear for people, these Bilderberg conferences really are the highest level political stroke economic conference that goes on anywhere in the NATO countries.
Well, Tony,
really.
can you just fill us in as to what the history and how it started for those who have never heard of the Bilderberg before? Because there'll be some out there who have never heard of it.
Well, I mean, it's been deliberately kept from the public since the mid-1950s when these conferences first started. I mean, if you look at it objectively from a news point of view, if any of the groups of people that were at these conferences, that is to say the royalty, the heads of the central banks, the finance ministers, or the heads of big business, like the heads of the oil companies and the heads of the big media corporations, the media barons, if any of those separate groups were meeting, you know, you could expect to hear about it.
Yeah.
And so it's doubly surprising and audacious, really, of our Western media not to be reporting when all of them are in the same place together as they were over the weekend, really, from Thursday, Friday and Saturday, and then they go home on Sunday. But the British representative on there is the Justice Secretary now, Kenneth Clark. He's been on the Bilderberg Steering Committee for about at least 10 years, to my knowledge.
Right.
And yet he is supposed to be a government minister. Where are his loyalties? Are they to this financial oligarchy, this financial elite, the central bankers of the Western world, or are they to us, his voters? And I would suggest that he really is compromising himself by going along to a meeting like this, and he's proving through his actions that he's not really interested in justice. I mean, look, just in the news today, for example, there's a report in the Independent newspaper all about the basically, what is happening with the privatisation of prison labour. Ken Clark wants to double the number of people who are working for outside businesses virtually for nothing in our prisons, up to 20,000 people. And he wants to basically make this something which the prison service does for a profit. Now, to me, this is absolutely unconscionable. The idea that while someone is locked up, that they should then be exploited at way less than the minimum wage to work for big companies like BMWs, for example. They're one of the companies that they get parts for their cars manufactured within British prisons.
Yeah.
The idea that we can be sort of rolling this out is doubly frightening, because another thing that Ken Clark is trying to do is to privatise our prisons. That is to say that private businesses would be running them. Now, I mean, that's already happening to a certain extent, but he wants to roll that even further out. Now, this is really actually quite scary, because what it means is that there's a private profit motive in incarcerating people, and Ken Clark is one of the main people involved in drawing up our new laws. So there's also a private profit involved in drawing up new laws to criminalise the poor and criminalise people who are suffering at the far bottom end of our austerity measures. So
Tony, Clark, can I just ask?
Clark is the most important person in Britain who's in that meeting. He is symbolic of all that is so really evil about this organisation.
Tony, if there isn't that much information available on it, because obviously the mainstream media are probably involved as well, as you're saying, and so it's not going out on mainstream media, how do you know, how do we have information such as Ken Clark being there? How's this information made available to the likes of your organisation and other groups that are interested?
Well, the Bilderbergs, what they do is they release a list of participants. Now, that is not a complete list by any means. You know, all it does is it tells you who definitely was there. It doesn't tell you who may have been there that wasn't on the official list of about 120 people. And they are, as I said, the, you know, sort of the royalty, the heads of the central banks, the big business leaders, and politicians. Now, for the US politicians who attend, I would also stress that what they're doing is they're actually breaking the criminal law in America, because there's something called the Logan Act in the United States, which says that that politicians are not allowed to attend these private meetings without making the minutes and what has been discussed available to the public. Now, this this conference centre is surrounded by machine guns. Neither the press nor the public are allowed to go anywhere near the place. And so the only way you can get other information other than the list of participants, which is all we're allowed to know, and like I say, it isn't a complete list, is by leaks afterwards. So quite often in the week after the conference, the staff that were at the hotel, who of course are all sworn to secrecy, but one or two of them have a conscience and want to talk to the press about what's been going on in there, they were, for example, bartenders, waiters, this kind of thing, will talk to the press possibly afterwards. So that's one of the ways we found out what's been going on in the past. For example, the attack on Iraq in the 2003, at the 2002 Bilderberg meeting, one of the leaks that came out after that conference was that that was being discussed in there. Now, when that came out in 2002 and I first heard that, I thought, this is just ridiculous. How on earth would anybody actually have an excuse to invade a sovereign country like Iraq? There really is no excuse to do it. But lo and behold, in 2003, the whole thing about the weapons of mass destruction, that lie was cooked up, and I think we can be pretty certain that the kind of thing that's being discussed at the Bilderberg this weekend was really looking back at Libya last year and seeing the success of the NATO operation there, which was really a joint operation between Britain, France and the United States. Even though the United States tried to keep its hand out from the public eye out of that by doing things like refueling the aircraft that were on their way to bomb Libya, that kind of thing. They will now be very, very closely looking at Syria. And now we know that what's going on in Syria is pretty frightening. You've got the government there is fighting a three-pronged attack, really, against foreign fighters who are coming in, quite possibly mercenaries but from Blackwater who are planting bombs and explosives in there, these kind of private military companies which are at arm's length from the Western intelligence services, plus they've got their own domestic fighters who are being supplied with some pretty heavy weaponry, things like anti-tank weapons, this kind of thing, so they do stand a chance against the Syrian army. So there's an insurrection really being fueled by the Bilderberg interests and by the NATO interests in Syria.
But when you say that, Tony, that's almost letting the president of Syria off the hook and saying he's whiter than white, he's not done anything wrong, and it's other people causing the trouble. But he's got to shoulder some of the blame in this situation, surely.
Well, I hate to say this, Dave, but I don't think there are any real world leaders out there who are whiter than white, but certainly not President Assad. But we have to go back to the UN Charter, which was signed after the end of the Second World War, learning the lessons of that Second World War, and that makes it absolutely clear that there is no excuse for attacking and invading a sovereign nation, unless that's got the explicit approval of the Security Council of the United Nations, which this attack on Syria quite clearly hasn't. It seems, though, that there are very, very powerful financial interests in the West. That's the military-industrial complex, plus the oil companies and all sorts of other reconstruction firms that want to get into Syria and into Iran. This is really a gateway. Syria is a gateway to Iran, of course. It's one of the last countries which is independent from the West, and many of the other Middle Eastern countries are actually far worse. Their human rights record, for example, in Saudi Arabia is far worse than that in Syria, and yet we don't really hear hardly anything about that in Kuwait, too.
That's because their relationship's better with the West. Yeah.
Because nobody is whiter than white amongst these leaders, no, I must agree. But
Tony,
we have to remember the UN Charter. What's happening right now is actually tearing up the UN Charter because there isn't any explicit approval for an attack by NATO on Syria. So what's happening is they're using any means possible to smuggle weapons to the rebels there right now. And this, I think, totally violates the spirit of the Charter.
Tony, where is all this going? I mean, I know I've got my own religious beliefs as to what happens in the end times according to the book of Revelation and so on. We probably haven't got time to delve into that in great detail today, obviously. I mean, people do seminars on this that can go on for weeks and weeks. But where is this Bilderberg group going? Are they wanting to have what they call a one world government eventually, and that's the aim for this group at the moment?
Well, okay, let's cut to the chase then. This group, I think, what we're looking at here are people that actually worship the old gods. This is the pre-Christian kind of setup, where actually the old gods really represent just simply a power cult and a money cult. So, you know, what they're really into is being part of an organization which rejects the traditional idea of Christian values completely, and also, of course, you know, any kind of idea of a monotheistic faith. They're kind of like a gang. But if you're talking about the Book of Revelation, the thing to watch, I think, is the important symbols which are in there to do with making people aware of when the end times are actually happening, which is this whole symbol of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Now, the reason that they're in there is to say, well, if things start unfolding in a certain way, then this is a message to God's people that that the end times are beginning. And those four horsemen of the apocalypse are, first of all, the white horse, which is a Pyrrhic victory. Then we've got the red horse, which is a very, very large, full-scale war. And then the black horse, and the black horse is to do with economic collapse, where there is literally prices for basic things like foodstuffs skyrocket out of everybody's affordability. And finally, the pale horse. The pale horse being mass famine and disease sweeping across the earth. So I think, you know, the thing is, we have a loving God, and he doesn't want bad things to happen to the planet without his own people who recognize the Bible and read the Bible and bother with it, to actually recognize what's going on. So I think the thing is just to keep an eye open for the signs for the four horsemen of the apocalypse, not to be overly worried about it, but then if this kind of thing does happen, just to be aware of what's going on and not to be afraid.
You see, David Icke's, I was listening to David Icke on YouTube the other week, and he was on doing a seminar up in, I think it's Halifax actually, and he was saying that a lot of these powers and these people that are secretly running things are from families from ancient families that have been powerful throughout all of history. Is that something that you would hold to?
Well, I don't really know about all that, Dave. And in fact, you know, I would part company with David Icke on quite a lot of his stuff. But I think it's quite clear to see that there is a cult out there of some sort which is obsessed with power, that doesn't like the idea of ordinary people getting their hands on anything to do with power. And certainly the main governments of Europe, it's quite clear to me, are controlled by one means or another. I mean, if you look at our political system in Britain, for example, you know, the three main parties aren't actually democratic. The members of those parties play very little part in deciding what the policies are. And if it seems that they're doing something, say, for example, the Liberal Democrats have been trying to say, well, we shouldn't be privatising the National Health Service, simply doesn't filter through to the leadership of the Liberal Democrats, and so nothing actually really gets done about the privatisation of the health service. So we've got a really broken system where greed and money rules the day. Unfortunately, that's not democracy. So, you know, I would suggest it doesn't actually matter so much to do with particular families, bloodlines and this kind of thing. It's basically about a system which promotes greed and puts people into powerful positions, really big positions of power, literally because they are prepared to compromise themselves and compromise values for the good of the cult, you know, which is part of the club. And many of these people look upon the rest of us with disdain. They think we're stupid, they think we're idiots, and that they can rule without us. In fact, you know, look down on us very much.
Tony, I'm a little bit confused because a lot of times, in fact, I'm going to take a call because there's a couple of people calling in. So we'll, are you okay to take a call, Tony?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, Sharon's on the line. Hi, Sharon.
Hello. Yes, Tony, I know about, well, it was mentioned a small paragraph in the Times in bold about the Bilderberg meeting this weekend. We've also had the Jubilee celebrations. Now, up until I knew about all this and the goings-on, and up until I knew that certain members of certain royal families are part of this Bilderberg group, I was a royalist. Now I have my doubts. I know Queen Sophia of Spain is one of them, and she discreetly disappeared this weekend. I assume she was there. Do you know of any of the British royal family that are in this group? And if so, are you prepared to name them?
Well, I know...
Or is that too difficult?
Certainly, no, I'm quite happy to name them. I know that Prince Philip has been along in the past, and quite whether Prince Charles has. That is, there's a lot of rumours going on that Prince Charles has been in the past as well. So, you know, I think you have to just understand that there are quite a lot of... And if you think about it, the European royals are essentially one family. You know, they are most all of them... the Saxe-Coburg-Gotha family. I mean, yes, they had to change their name in Britain during the First World War because it was seen to be a bad idea to have the name of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha when you were actually trying to spearhead the attack against Germany. They were German name, what was seen to be cool. But that's, I think, you know, what we're dealing with there is essentially different branches of one family.
Tony, your phone's not very good at the moment, so thank you, Sharon. Cheers, Sharon. Thank you. Yeah, there was another caller coming in, but they've hung up. Tony, I'm hoping are you still there? Because your phone wasn't very good at the moment.
I am, yeah.
I was just going to ask a question, because me looking into this more and more, as I have over the internet last few months, since talking to you, really, and that is, there's some groups that are saying that the leaders that we see are figureheads, you know, your David Camerons, your Barack Obamas, and even the royal families and so on in the head of states. A lot of folks are saying that they're figureheads and that they're not really running the world. There's other people behind it. And yet, on the other hand, you're saying that there's royal family members that may well be at the Bilderberg meetings, or may well be, you know, people like Ken Clark. So are they figureheads or are they not figureheads? That's the question I'm throwing at you.
Well, I think you have to look at the Bilderberg Steering Committee. This is, you know, really is one or two people from all the main countries in Europe on that committee, and they make the decisions about who gets invited along to each conference. I think there's some very, very genuine power in there. But then, you know, if you're looking at who's actually really running things, it is essentially a lot of this is driven by financial criminals. This is by people who have made fantastic amounts of money, astronomical amounts of cash. I mean, a lot of crooks would nowadays, they would say, well, nowadays we don't rob banks, we own them. And in fact, Charlie Richardson, the famous South London criminal who was arrested in the 1970s in the Harold Wilson government, when he had done his time and in the early Thatcher years, he came out of prison, he walked straight into a job in the City of London. So I don't think that there's any real problem with addressing these people as the banksters. And they are in cahoots, quite clearly, with the military firms in Britain and in France and the United States and elsewhere. They get on very, very well together. And essentially, they make sure that plenty of cash is always available for these military companies to be developing new weapons. And then, of course, there is a motive in allowing new wars to begin, things like the Libya conflict, the Iraq, the Afghanistan, the Iran conflicts, in order to actually sell those weapons. And, you know, if you're talking about something like cruise missiles, well, they're about £1 million a pop. Every time one of those is fired, that's another £1 million in the pockets of these private military companies. I mean, I would suggest that actually the development and the production of arms should immediately be nationalised so that there isn't any, you know, private profit motive in starting wars anymore, because what we're starting to see is really a pretty horrific vision, which George Orwell warned us about back in the 1940s, you know, beavering away inside the BBC World Service at Bush House, writing his book 1984. He predicted that we could have a future system where the private profit motive had gone so far that it had actually taken over our arms industry and our finance industries and our government. And I think we're actually approaching that now. I mean, you wouldn't know that looking at much of our mainstream media, which, you know, particularly on television, is sort of game shows and sort of feel-good programs. But we are in actually a very dangerous situation financially and militarily, particularly with the push towards Iran and Syria and the possible confrontation with the Russians and the Chinese. Although I think what's happened at Bilderberg over the weekend, there are some very high-level Chinese delegates at this elite meeting, which suggests that maybe a deal is being done between NATO and the Chinese. I mean, in China, obviously, we've got a pretty totalitarian type of a regime where free speech simply isn't, you know, conscionable, is not allowed. I mean, you know, the anniversary of Tianmen Square has just been,
and we've seen protesters arrested.
Over there. So you can see that, you know, if you're looking at the censorship of the Western mainstream media, that actually fits quite well with the Chinese. And what may be going on here is a sort of an attempt to outflank the Russians by getting the Chinese on side with the economic program and the economic takeover of the Middle East as they sort of divide up the spoils of the world between them.
But even today, Tony, we've seen Putin on his way to China to discuss Syria and also obviously trade relations as well with China, between Russia and China, which is worth $85 billion apparently.
Well, that's right. I mean, obviously, the Russians aren't stupid.
No.
They are also lobbying the Chinese, saying, hang on a minute, you know, do you really want to privatise your banking system? Because the Chinese have still got national state banks. And the idea being, really, that that is actually a very, very sensible thing to be doing. Just look at what's been going on in Wall Street and in the City of London and the European Central Bank and the Eurozone with the complete disaster that these private banks have created. Incidentally, I was fascinated to read today as well that the Christine Lagarde and the IMF and also the European Central Bank and Angela Merkel are all lobbying Spain right now, because it seems that the Spanish finance minister is actually showing a little bit of spine and standing up to the idea of another bailout, which is absolutely fantastic to see. But obviously that is not fitting in with what the European elite want to see.
Now, Spain don't want, I mean, from what we're hearing, Spain do not want to have a bailout. Mariano Rajoy was saying it yesterday, but he was also saying, which worries me, that in order to get more help from Europe, that we may give away our powers and say that Europe, that a delegation in Europe will decide how much Spain spends rather than the government of Spain budgeting for itself, which worries me.
Well, I think what many people don't realise is that when Spain gave up the peseta and entered the Eurozone, they also got rid of the one secret weapon which the Spanish people could use against the powerful German markets, and that is the idea of the Spanish government printing its own money. Obviously, it cannot do that in the Eurozone, right, because the euro is, you know, an international currency, whereas with the peseta, there's absolutely no reason why the Spanish finance couldn't just say, well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to actually just print some pesetas and spend them into the economy. I mean, they can't do that in the eurozone. And this is one thing I think none of the countries that originally entered the eurozone thought about was, well, hang on a minute, what happens if it comes to the point where we need to actually start printing some of our own currencies because the banks are messing around and not allowing enough of our currency to circulate? So really, by entering the euro, these various countries, including Spain, have essentially given up sovereignty, I'm afraid. That's what the situation is. And so to go back to the peseta really is the most important option. Otherwise, you're talking about what is in The Guardian today, which is quite clearly now, there is a proposal for a United States of Europe. And that is the so-called solution which is now being offered around Europe by the Germans, by the French, is to say, well, okay guys, what we'll do is we'll make your economy better, but only if you join this United States of Europe, which is of course a total disaster. We've already seen that Goldman Sachs is now appointing prime ministers in parts of the Eurozone, and I'm afraid what we'll be doing if we do go into a United States of Europe is Europe will be being run by the very criminals who have created this situation in the first place.
Tony, we're going to have to leave it there, I'm afraid. I've got two commercial breaks in before the news. And we touched so many subjects when I have a chat with you. It's really fantastic. And Tony, no doubt we'll speak to you again in the future at some point. We want to appreciate you for your time. I know it's a bank holiday there today, and you should be enjoying yourself.
Okay, my final comment, Dave, is just to do with Baroness Varzi in Britain being referred to be looked into by Alex Allen. And this is a classic diversionary tactic, because really the person who should be being looked into, of course, is the Culture Secretary Jeremy Hunt for selling the people out with the B Sky B bid.
So it's a bit of a distraction. A distraction,
Thanks very much,
Tony,
for having me on. I hope you have I've provoked a few good callers.
You always do. Tony, thanks very much. Speak to you soon.
Thanks, Dave.
Cheers, have a great week. Bye bye now. Tony Gosling there from Bilderberg.org. If you want to get more information on him and his organisation, then of course go to Bilderberg.org.